So today we're going to do something a little bit different. In order to coerce me into doing Bhagavatam class today, I cut a deal with Ananta Prabhu, and he gave me permission to do something a little bit radical. And what I'd like to ask is that everybody move close. If I'd had sweeps, I'd be able to throw them, but I don't have any. So today we're going to use a method of studying Srila Prabhupada's books. Very often we read Srila Prabhupada's books, and even like in Bhakti Shastri or whatever, we study Srila Prabhupada's books in certain ways. We memorize the verses and we try to get an overview and so many different things. So there's a system that I've been working with devotees here and there and everywhere. Never tried it in Slovenia before, so we'll see if it works here. For looking at Srila Prabhupada's books, and very often, of course we can't look at all the books right now, but very often certain things, we just kind of read them and we think they're very nice, they're enlivening, inspiring, we remember Krishna for a few minutes. And then we close the book and go about our life, and we don't really think too much about how it applies in our personal life. So today we're going to read a chapter from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, the 80th chapter. Someone was shocked to find out there were 80 chapters in the... There's more than 80 chapters in the 10th canto. And actually, in this particular chapter, because it's translated by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, there's very few purports. I'm not going to read any of them. I'm just going to read through the chapter, the story, and then we're going to have a discussion. And how deep our discussion is going to depend on you. Okay, so you have to listen. Right, that's where it begins. It begins by hearing, right? We hear, hearing. So in the beginning, it starts with hearing. So you can start by that. And we'll, this is the verse that begins the discussion, but I don't think we're going to chant it. We're just going to begin to read, because otherwise there won't be enough time. So starting with text 6 of this chapter, because the first few verses are a discussion between Suta Goswami and Maharaj Parikit. And Maharaj Parikit is asking how he can understand certain things in Krishna consciousness, and Suta Goswami is speaking about that. So he starts with, Lord Krishna had a certain Brahmin friend named Sudama, who was most learned in Vedic knowledge and detached from all sense enjoyment. Furthermore, his mind was peaceful and his senses subdued. That's the verse that's on the board. It describes the wonderful qualities of Sudama. He was a very qualified devotee. We should only have those qualities. Living as a householder, he wasn't even a renunciate, he maintained himself with whatever came of its own accord. The wife of that poorly dressed Brahmin suffered along with him and was emaciated with hunger. The chaste wife of the poverty-stricken Brahmin once approached him, her face dried up because of her distress. Trembling with fear, she spoke as follows. Sudama's wife said, O Brahmana, isn't it true that the husband of the goddess of fortune is the personal friend of your exalted self? That greatest of Yadavas, the Supreme Lord Krishna, is compassionate to Brahmanas and very willing to grant them his shelter. O fortunate one, please approach him, the real shelter of all saints. He will certainly give abundant wealth to such a suffering householder as you. And it should be noted here that Sudama's wife was a great devotee. And she was suffering because everything she got, she gave to her husband and her children. And she didn't have anything to give him. She couldn't feed him. She couldn't feed them either. So she was in a lot of anxiety. And she also knew that her husband wasn't very inclined to beg, what to speak of, to beg from Krishna. But she also knew that her husband was very inclined to go see Krishna. So she was inspired to ask him to go see Krishna. And she tried to defeat all the arguments that he might come up with. Well, you know, I'm a poor Brahmin. What does anybody think of me? So she said, you know, he's the husband of the goddess Fortune. He has everything. You don't have to worry about asking him that he won't have. And he's the friend of the Brahmanas. And he's very willing to help them. So Lord Krishna is now the ruler of the Bhojas, Vrishnis, and Andakas, and is staying in Dwarka, since he gives even his own self to anyone who simply remembers his lotus feet, which, by the way, you're doing all the time, my dear husband. What doubt is there that he, the spiritual master of the universe, will bestow upon his sincere worshiper prosperity and material enjoyment, which are not very desirable? So she's saying, we know that we don't really want material life, but we need to stay alive in order to be Krishna conscious, to do our duties. So please go and ask Krishna. When his wife thus repeatedly implored him in various ways, the Brahmin thought to himself, to see Lord Krishna is indeed the greatest achievement in life. Thus he decided to go. But first he told her, my good wife, is there anything in the house I can bring as a gift? Please give it to me. So Sudama's wife begged 4 handfuls of broken flat rice from neighboring Brahmanas, tied up the rice in a torn piece of cloth, and gave it to her husband as a present for Lord Krishna. And by the way, he tucked that in the belt of his dhoti. Taking that flat rice, the saintly Brahmin set off for Dwarka, all the while wondering, how will I be able to have Krishna's audience? Sudama was thinking, how am I going to get past the guards? How am I going to get into Dwarka? The learned Brahmin, joined by some local Brahmins, passed 3 guard stations and went through 3 gateways. And it's described, and then he asked the guards, which palace is Lord Krishna in? Because he saw 16,108 palaces. And the guard said, oh, he's in all of them. You can go to anyone. He's in all of them. So Sudama decided to enter one of them. He then entered one of the opulent palaces, which was Rukmini's palace. And he did, when he walked in the palace, he felt as if he were attaining full bliss of liberation. He couldn't remember anything else. His consciousness of everything else disappeared. At that time, Lord Achyuta was seated on a consort's bed. Spotting the Brahmin from a distance, the Lord immediately stood up, went forward to meet him, and with great pleasure embraced him. The lotus-eyed Supreme Lord felt intense ecstasy upon touching the body of his dear friend, the wise Brahmin, and thus he shed tears of love. Krishna shed tears of love. Lord Krishna seated his dear friend Sudama on the bed, and then the Lord, who purifies the whole world, personally offered him various tokens of respect and washed his feet. After which he sprinkled the water in his own head. He anointed him with divinely fragrant sandalwood, aguru, and kumkum paste, and happily worshipped him with aromatic incense and arrays of lamps. And finally, offering him betel nut and the gift of a cow, he welcomed him with pleasing words. By fanning him with her chamara, the divine goddess of fortune, Rukmini, personally served that poor Brahmana, whose clothing was torn and dirty, and who was so thin that the veins on his body were visible all over. The people in that royal palace were astonished to see Krishna, the Lord of spotless glory, so lovingly honored this shabby-dressed Brahmana. The residents of the palace said, what pious acts has this unkempt, impoverished Brahmana performed? People regard him as lowly and contemptible, yet the spiritual master of the 3 worlds, the abode of Goddess Shri, is serving him reverently, leaving the goddess of fortune sitting on her bed. The Lord has embraced this Brahmin as if he were his older brother. Sukadev Goswami continued, taking each other's hands, O King, Krishna and Sudama talk pleasantly about how they once lived together in the school of their guru. Krishna said, my dear Brahmana, you know well the days of Dharma. After you offered the gift of remuneration to our guru and returned home from this school, did you marry a compatible wife or not? Even though you are mostly involved in household affairs, your mind is not afflicted by material desires, nor, O learned one, do you take much pleasure in the pursuit of material wealth. This I am well aware of. Having renounced all material propensities which spring from the Lord's illusory energy, some people execute worldly duties with their minds undisturbed by mundane desires. They act as I do to instruct the general populace. My dear Brahman, do you remember how we lived together in our spiritual master's school? When a twice-born student has learned from his guru all that is to be learned, he can enjoy spiritual life, which lies beyond all ignorance. My dear friend, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master, and he who initiates him as a twice-born Brahman and engages him in religious duties is indeed more directly his spiritual master. But the person who bestows transcendental knowledge upon members of all the spiritual orders of society is one's ultimate spiritual master. Indeed, he is good as my own self. Certainly, O Brahman, all of the followers of the Varnashram system, of all of them, those who take advantage of the words I speak in my form as a spiritual master and thus easily cross over the ocean of material existence, best understand their own welfare. I, the soul of all beings, am not satisfied by ritualistic worship, brahminical initiation, penances, or self-discipline, as I am by faithful service rendered by one's spiritual master. Rendered to one's spiritual master. O Brahmana, do you remember what happened to us while we were living with our spiritual master? Once our guru's wife sent us out to fetch for firewood, and after we entered the vast forest, O twice-born one, an unseasonal storm rose with fierce wind and rain and harsh thunder. Then, as the sun set, the forest was covered by darkness in every direction, and with all flooding, we could not distinguish land from water. Constantly besieged by the powerful wind and rain, we lost our way amidst the flooding waters. We simply held each other's hands and, in great distress, wandered aimlessly in the forest. Our guru Sandapani Muni, understanding our predicament, set out after sunrise to search for us, his disciples, and found us in distress. Oh, my children, you have suffered so much for my sake. The body is most dear to every living creature, but you are so dedicated to me that you completely disregarded your own comfort. And it should be noted that even though they were so disturbed by the storm, they held on to the firewood that they had collected for their spiritual master. In all the running around and everything, they didn't lose it. This indeed is the duty of all true disciples, to repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him with pure hearts their wealth and even their very lives. You boys are first-class brahmanas, and I am satisfied with you. May all your desires be fulfilled, and may the Vedic mantras you have learned never lose their meaning for you in this world or the next. We had many similar experiences while living in our spiritual master's home. Simply by the grace of the spiritual master, a person can fulfill life's purpose and attain eternal peace. And then Sudama answers, what could I possibly have failed to achieve, O Lord of Lords, O universal teacher, since I was able to personally live with you, whose every desire is fulfilled at the home of our spiritual master? O mighty Lord, your body comprises the absolute truth in the form of the Vedas, and is thus the source of all auspicious goals of life. That you took up residence at the school of the spiritual master is simply one of your pastimes in which you play the role of a human being. And I just want to read one more thing. In the course of his loving talks with his friend Sudama, Lord Krishna said, my dear Sudama, have you brought any gift for me from home? I regard as very significant even the smallest offering from my loving devotees. But the poor Brahmin was ashamed to present Krishna with the meager gift of rice. However, since Lord Krishna is the supersoul dwelling in all hearts, he knew why Sudama had come to visit him. So he grabbed the bundle of that flat rice Sudama was hiding and ate a handful of it with great pleasure. He was about to eat a second morsel when Rukmini Devi stopped him. Feeling as if he had gone back to Godhead, Sudama spent the night comfortably in Lord Krishna's palace, and the next morning he set off for home. As he passed along the highway, he thought of how fortunate he was to have been so honored by Sri Krishna. Absorbed in his meditation, Sudama arrived at the palace where his home used to be, and he was struck with great wonder. Instead of his broken-down hovel, he saw a series of opulent palaces. While he stood astonished, a group of beautiful men and women came forward to greet him with singing and music. The brahmana's wife, wonderfully adorned with celestial jewelry, came out of the palace and welcomed him with great love and reverence. Sudama entered his home together with her, thinking that his extraordinary transformation must have been due to the Supreme Lord's mercy on him. From then on, Sudama lived his life amidst lavish wealth, yet he maintained his good detachment and constantly chanted the glories of Lord Krishna. In a short time, he broke off all bonds of bodily attachment and attained the kingdom of God. So now, what happened? What do you remember? Okay, so he came home. We're starting at the end. He came home, and he saw this beautiful palace. It was more opulent than Indra. How did he get there? Come on, guys. What happened? Yeah, his wife came out. She was all dressed up. What else happened? Hello? Okay, she embraced him with her mind because there were so many people around. She couldn't really embrace him. It wouldn't be proper. What happened? Hello? Yes. Okay, he had a lot of wealth, but still he was worshiping Krishna just like he didn't have any wealth. It didn't matter to him. Wealth, not wealth, didn't matter. What else happened? Come on, facts. Huh? Go ahead, speak. His wife wanted more? At the beginning, when he had nothing, his wife sent him to ask Krishna for something. She didn't want more. She just wanted to survive. Jai Panchatattva. Come on, what else? What happened? Yes. Okay, he welcomed Sudama and he washed his feet. What did he do with the water? He sprinkled it on his head and everybody else's head too. What else happened? How did the residents of Dwarka that were living in Rukmini's palace, what did they think when they saw Sudama? He must have done a lot of penances. What else did they think of him? What did they see when they saw him? Right, he must be very fortunate because he didn't have good clothes, he was dirty, he was so skinny. How did he know he was skinny? His veins were popping out all over his body. And all the queens, they thought, who is this guy? Right, where did he come from? And why is Krishna treating him so nicely? Krishna left Rukmini and went to him and embraced him. What did he do to deserve that? Right, and... Huh?
He was his friend from school.
He's his friend from school. So Krishna saw his friend from school. He got up. He ran across the palace. He embraced Sudama. He sat him down. He asked him, what did he talk to him about? The news on Facebook. What? Their times together in Sandapani Muni school. What happened when they were in Sandapani Muni school? Okay, they were sent by the guru's wife to gather forest wood, firewood from the forest. What happened while they were there? There was a big storm. We just had a few of those in America, in a few different places. Our Puerto Rico temple was practically removed from the planet. So what did it look like? Describe, what did it look like? You couldn't distinguish water from land. The water was so high that you couldn't see where the land was and where the water was, what was deep, what was shallow. And what did the boys do? They held on to the firewood and they, what happened? They make it back in the storm? No, why? Huh? They were wandering around the forest. They got lost. And when did they get found? In the next morning, yes. Who came to find them? So, who? Who came to find him? The disciples? Who else? Was it just the disciples who went to find him? Sandapani Muni himself, the guru, was in so much anxiety. He went personally to find them. And what did he say when he found them? Hello? He blessed them. He said, you boys have given your life. You've shown by example how to behave towards the spiritual master. That you're willing to do everything, full service, and give your life to the spiritual master. And therefore, I bless you. And what was his blessing? That all the mantras they learned and all the learning they learned would have a permanent effect on them. They would remember them forever, unlike you who didn't remember much of the story. Okay, so now, what does this have to do with you? It's a nice story, Sudama Vipra, nice story. We heard it before. What does it have to do with you? Anything? Okay, it shows us an example of how devotees should do. So the next time there's a hurricane in Slovenia, we should go out and go on Harinam. What else? What does it have to do with us? Why is this story here? How to serve the spiritual master. Example? And what else does it show us? Never give up. Keep going, right? Even when you don't know where you're going, you're lost, you don't know what to do, just keep going. What else? Krishna accepts a gift, even very little. Sudama brought broken rice, and Krishna ate it. Actually, I didn't read because it's not in here, but in Krishna book, Prabhupada says that Krishna thought that offering was better than all the offerings that he receives in the temple. All the kachoris and the samosas and the rice and all that thing. He liked that offering the best. And when he went to eat more, Rukmini stopped him. Why? Do you remember? She wanted the prasadam. Okay, maybe she did. Maybe she did. But what she said was that if you eat more than this, more than what you've already eaten, I'm going to be indebted to you for the rest of my days. I'll have to go live with him. I'll have to move out of the palace and go live with him because we'll be so indebted, to him. Okay, what else do we learn from this? Super. Yeah, so the Supreme Personality of Godhead knows our heart. He knew Sudama's heart. Even though Sudama, the residents of Dwarka, looked at him and thought, who is this guy? He's such a mess. But Krishna knew his heart. Not only did he know his heart then, but he knew his heart that he was living as a householder, but he wasn't attached to material things at all. And he had full confidence that he wouldn't get overwhelmed by material wealth, that he could take wealth and it wouldn't take him away from Krishna. And when we read the end of the chapter, it specifically said that he was able to engage in devotional service without, even though he had so much wealth now, but it didn't affect him in the least. And ultimately, he just walked away from it all. He wasn't attached to any of it. What else do we learn from this? Yeah. Yes?
The greatest pleasure is to have a Vedic knowledge and then to do the service properly and Krishna will bless you.
Okay, if you have Vedic knowledge, if you study the Vedic scriptures and you practice it, then for the rest of your life you'll be able to serve Krishna, and in the end Krishna will embrace you. What else? Yes. Yeah, the perfection of life is to see Krishna. So even though he had to do something that wasn't very comfortable for him, it wasn't comfortable for him to go and ask Krishna for something. Sometimes it's not comfortable for us on Sankirtan to ask somebody for a donation or to say, excuse me, sir, but would you like to take a book? But Sudama thought about the positive thing. I'm going to go see Krishna. This is the purpose of my life. She's giving me the opportunity to go see Krishna. And maybe she's asking me to do something I don't want to do, but I'm going to go see Krishna, confirmed. So he was looking forward to seeing his Lord. And so much so that what happened when he got there and when he left, he never asked for anything. He was there, and he was with Krishna, and Krishna hugged him, and Krishna took the rice, and all these things happened, but he never asked Krishna for anything. He left without asking Krishna for anything. But Krishna knew his heart, so Krishna gave him what he was asking for, or what he came for, even without him asking. So what does that have to do with us? Have anything to do with us? Krishna is thankful and appreciates every little thing we do. What else?
He knows what we need.
He knows what we need. We don't have to ask Krishna for our material welfare. Krishna will take care of whatever we need, not necessarily what we want, but what we need, Krishna will give it to us, exactly what we need. And we don't have to ask him because he knows what's in our heart. Anything else? Yes. Okay, Krishna is always giving us many gifts, and the question is whether we can see them, whether we can appreciate them, and whether they cannot affect our love for him. Because Sudama got all this wealth, but it didn't affect his love for Krishna one way or the other. He was steady in his affection for Krishna no matter what. Poor, rich, didn't matter. What else?
It's like if there's good kirtan, we actually enter.
Okay.
And then we're blessed with forgetfulness.
Super. So when we're in the spiritual atmosphere, it's like Sudama. As soon as he entered Dwarka, the palace, he forgot about everything else. He forgot all his problems, his skinniness, his dirtiness, his trepidation about going to see Krishna. He forgot it all. And sometimes a kirtan, when we're submerged in a kirtan, we're like that. We forget everything else, right? Everything disappears. The world disappears. We just can become absorbed in the holy name. What else?
Do not judge others by their external appearance.
Great. Okay. Don't judge others by their external appearance. The residents of Krishna's palace, I mean, they were great devotees. I mean, they were in Krishna's palace in Dwarka. So they were eternal associates of Krishna. But they saw Sudama's dress and they thought, what's this guy doing here? Or who is he? How did he get here? What's his qualification? So we shouldn't be careful because we may not recognize pure devotees in our midst. We may not see who is qualified and who is not qualified by their external appearance. So we should be very cautious not to offend anybody, not to denigrate anybody because of their external appearance. Krishna sees what's inside our heart and he knows what's there. So we should have confidence that Krishna will see that in us and he will reciprocate with that. What else? Okay, he's not really interested in or not impressed by chanting all these mantras and doing all these jagyas. He doesn't really have, there's many stories, right, that indicate that. The story of the brahmanas and the wives of the brahmanas. The brahmanas were doing all the pujas, the wives were cooking in the kitchen. But Krishna reciprocated with the wives because they reciprocated with him, and the Brahmas were too busy worshipping Krishna to notice Krishna was there. Yeah, they were too busy. So Krishna, he loves the devotion of the devotees. That's what he needs. He doesn't need anything else. And when he sees that devotion, he becomes inspired to take care. Right? He becomes inspired to take care. Oh, what about the guru? Okay, first the service to guru is what Krishna is pleased with.
I'm not pleased by Brahminic renunciation, by advances, but as I am with the service to guru, which is a faithful service to guru.
Okay, and you?
That would, for us, it seems like that the instructions of the guru, we should never under any circumstances let it go.
Super, okay, great. So if we take that, connect that collecting of the wood that Sudama and Krishna did as representative of the instructions of the guru. We collect the instructions of the guru, and no matter what difficulty we find ourselves in, we should never let that go. We should keep that tight. And yes?
We should disregard our comfort.
Okay, we should be willing. We should be willing to disregard our comfort, our physical comfort, in the service of Krishna. Certainly Prabhupada was an example of that. That he was able to disregard his personal comfort and give everything in the service of Krishna, in the service of his guru's order. And he made a great sacrifice for that. And we are indebted to him for that. And what about the guru in this story? What about Sandapani Muni? Yeah, he was very concerned about their welfare. He personally came to take care of them. This was, and actually Prabhupada was like that. There were some devotees who were preaching in countries that were hostile. And when he was reading in the newspaper how this country was under siege and people were dying, and he was even reading there's some Americans that died, and he hadn't heard anything from Brahmananda and the other devotees, and he was in so much anxiety, and finally he got a telegram saying they were okay, and then Brahmananda came. And he immediately got up and embraced him. He was saying, I was in so much anxiety worried about you. I was so worried about you. And even people who just left, devotees who just left the Hare Krishna movement, they weren't in physical danger, but they were in spiritual danger. And Prabhupada worried about them. He said, I prayed to Krishna. I was always praying to Krishna that you would come back. Always praying to Krishna. He said, we give gallons of blood for every devotee that comes to Krishna's service. And if we lose even one, it's a great loss. So I'm always praying to Krishna that all of you will not fall down. So we see that reciprocation with the spiritual master. When he sees the Krishna and Sudama, they serve Sandapani Muni, therefore he was so indebted to them, so pleased by their service. And because he was pleased, Krishna was pleased. And it's interesting how Krishna talks in the third person about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he talks about God as if God was somebody else. Okay, now, what can this do for our life? How can we put this into practice? Let's say we were preaching to somebody. How could we use this story to tell somebody else about Krishna? Okay, well, pick somebody that you can talk to. You have anybody you want. Okay, sometimes people think that devotees are actually very poor people. They live very austerely. They walk in here, they don't see any furniture, there's no flat screen TV, right? We sometimes eat off paper utensils, and we don't have a whole lot of fancy clothes, do we? No one has fancy clothes. But we can see from this story that if you're ready to receive, Krishna can give you everything. It's not that you have to be poor to worship Krishna, but you have to be detached. to be able to worship Krishna. And if you want to serve Krishna, Krishna will give you everything you need to serve Krishna. And that's very important for us to understand, because Prabhupada was confident of that, that Krishna would give him everything. When he went to New York, he came with nothing. He had 40 rupees. At that time, 40 rupees, even now, you can't change rupees in any other country but India. If I take euro, I can go to the bank in America and change euro into dollars. But if I go with rupees, it's like, forget it. It might as well be writing paper, you know. they don't do anything with rupees, right? Forget it. So Prabhupada came with nothing. He had a trunk of books, a little bit of cereal, two or three sets of dhoti and white plastic shoes, and 40 rupees. But when he was starting, he was looking at bank buildings in Manhattan to purchase for a temple. Now, if you can imagine how much money a bank building in Manhattan, you sell by the square inch, it costs like $100,000, $200,000. To rent one bedroom apartment is $1,500 a month, to rent a one bedroom apartment. So Prabhupada was looking at bank buildings, and he was thinking, we're going to buy this as a temple. I like this one. He called the real estate agent. He said, take me in, I want to see. And the guy taking him around and showing him everything as if he was going to buy. And then at the end he said, you should give this to us, because we're the Hare Krishnas, right? We're serving Krishna. We can use this in Krishna's service. You should just donate it. The guy's like, what? But Krishna can donate it. He can give anything. When we're ready, Krishna will give us anything. And so we don't have so much time anymore, but I just want you to understand what these so-called stories, if you read them with the intention of milking them, and we could go on more, you can find so much to understand, to learn, that's applicable to your life. That's applicable to your life. They're not just stories. They're there to teach us something. Every single one of them, from the swallowing of the forest fire to the dancing on Kali's head to the lifting of Govardhan Hill to the tying of Krishna's belly with a rope. They're wonderful leelas, and they're attractive to the mind, but they're also instructive. They show us in our own life how to worship Krishna. These devotees in Goloka Vrindavan, these devotees in Dwarka, these devotees of Krishna that are narrated, their activities are narrated from the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're not there just for us to have some good reading material before we fall asleep at night. Or maybe while we fall asleep at night. They're there to give us deep spiritual guidance, to give us deep inspiration in Krishna consciousness. So when we read these stories, we should go through this procedure in our heart, in our mind. And this is also how, my next complaint, is that every single one of you should be able to give Bhagavatam class. Why do you have to listen to me 2-3 days in a row? You should give class. And if you read this way, then you'll find things to give class about. Right? Because something will jump out at you and inspire you and enliven you and enthuse you, and then you talk about that. If you're enthused and enlivened, you'll be able to enthuse and enliven others. And if you don't find anything enthusing and enlivening, then you better chant better japa, and you better read with devotees who are enthused and enlivened. Because these books are there for that purpose. And Prabhupada worked so hard to make these books. He worked so hard to make these books. With his last breath, literally his last breath, he was translating the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was translating the Srimad Bhagavatam. With his last breath, they were holding a dictaphone to his mouth. He could hardly be heard because he was so weak, but he was translating. His consciousness was completely sharp. Physically, he was finished. So Prabhupada wanted us to read these books. He took time to write these books. He gave us everything we needed to know in these books. He told us at the very beginning that I am an old man. I may die at any moment. This was in 1967, 68, he told us. I may die at any moment. I put everything you need to know in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he said that about Bhagavad Gita. Then he said that about Krishna book. Then he said that about Nectar of Devotion. That I've put everything you need to know in these books. So any one of them, if you read it carefully and you churn it, you churn the ocean, then you'll find the nectar of devotion. It will be there for you, but you have to look for it. And if you look for it, you'll find it. And it will enliven you and inspire you and move you forward with strength and conviction in Krishna's service. So I'll stop there. And if there's any questions, we can... Yes. There's two kinds of brahmanas. Okay, there's the yogic brahmana or the caste brahmana that is chanting mantras and following Vedic dharma to the T. May not know about Krishna, may know about Krishna sometimes. The kind of brahmana that Prabhupada gave us, that kind of initiation, he gave us second initiation, but even without second initiation, he wanted us to act brahminically. He wanted us to be clean. He wanted us to be fixed on Krishna. He wanted us to render devotional service. And he had no bars, no boundaries, what he would allow us to do in Krishna's service. And it was because he was able to see that we were all souls and not bodies, that we could transcend our existence within this Kalosudrasambhava material birth. He gave us a connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his mercy, by our connection with him. When we first went to India, people were criticizing very much. They wouldn't eat at the Krishna Balaram temple. They wouldn't even take Mahaprasadam because they said it was cooked by the Malechas, and how could they eat this prasadam? It wasn't really prasadam. It wasn't really accepted by Krishna. And Prabhupada was very angry. But later, gradually, they saw that actually these devotees, they were very dedicated to serving Krishna. And so that they got over that. Huh? They got over that. But it took them... They had to overcome their attachment to a certain position in the material world. Our link with brahminical quality is through the spiritual world. It doesn't have a material link. So they were asking, who is your gotra? Well, who is your family line that you can say that you're a Brahmin? Prabhupada said, you tell them that you are with me. That we're in the gotra of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, that's our qualification. So by following the order of the spiritual master, by taking Krishna consciousness seriously, we have the qualification to be brahminical, to be a Brahmin. And because Prabhupada was willing to do that, he was successful in spreading Krishna consciousness in the West. The other... godbrothers of Srila Prabhupada, they didn't take the coal and try to wash it. Prabhupada took the coal and tried to wash it, and he was successful. They wouldn't even try, but Prabhupada succeeded because he was willing to understand, because he could completely understand that we were souls, and that if the soul comes in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the soul will shine forth. And the soul has no varna, has no ashram. The soul is dasa, dasa, nudasa, servant of Krishna. And that was what Prabhupada gave us. Is that okay? Hare Krishna. Somebody else? Yes. What happened with Vishnu Janaswami? That really doesn't have much to do with what we're talking about. Vishnu Jan was a great devotee. I knew him quite well. He was a wonderful person. He had some issue in his mind. He didn't have a problem overtly, but in his mind he felt that he was having some weakness. And then Prabhupada made a statement. Did you read Damodar Vilas? It's better that you read Damodar Vilas. It's described in there, in Vyasaki's book. Vyasaki wrote a book on Vishnu Jan Maharaj, multiple volumes. And he speaks there about what happened. So, I mean, no one really knows, because no one, there's no proof, but the general assumption is that he went to the Ganga, and there's people that you can hire that will tie rocks to you and then throw you in the Ganga. And that's what he did, because he heard from Srila Prabhupada that if you have material desire and you can't maintain your vows, then it's better to commit suicide. And then Prabhupada, after that, said something else, but Vishnu Jan Maharaj didn't hear what he said after that. So he just kind of absorbed that statement and he acted upon it. That's what's generally thought of by the devotees. Yes.
I have a question, like giving the class from Srimad Bhagavatam with my poor knowledge, how is this good for anybody else listening?
Well, start by reading.
Okay.
You don't have to start giving class tomorrow, but you can prepare for giving class by studying.
But then it will be also good for others to hear, because I will be, because I don't
But I have to tell you that when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, the oldest devotee in the movement was a devotee for a year. And the place that we were coming from was so, if you look at joining the Hare Krishna movement as zero, okay, and then you go up from zero to a million, where we were coming from was minus a million. We were all the way on the other side of the spectrum, not following anything, not doing anything, not living like humans, really. Okay, so Prabhupada grabbed us over here somewhere, and he dragged us to here, and then we were about 1 centimeter from zero when Prabhupada started traveling. He left us in New York, and he went to San Francisco, and he said, don't worry, you just give class every morning, put a picture of me on the Vyasasana, and then you speak. You read what I've written, and you speak from what I've written, repeat it, and share your realization. If your realization is, I need to read more because I don't really understand, then you can share that realization. But you gotta start somewhere. If everyone's waiting till they become advanced, no one's going to give class. Because once you get advanced, you know that you're not advanced, and then you'll never give class. So what happens then? Right? Then no one will talk about Bhagavatam. We'll just sit and listen to Prabhupada give classes every week, which is very nice theoretically, but practically speaking, do you remember what happened when I read the story and then I said, what happened? How many people answered? Nobody. Everybody just sat here and looked at me until I started to pull things out of people. So you're listening to Prabhupada speak. That's very nice. But what happens is your consciousness goes on off. And unless somebody is encouraging you to remember and churning the ocean a little bit, if you do that every day, you'll just hear yada, 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 yada. And you fall asleep. So we have to come together, we have to discuss, we have to churn the ocean, because that's how we find, that's what the Association of Devotees is for. In hearing from each other, enlivening one another, discussing Krishna's Leela, discussing Krishna consciousness. This is how we become inspired. This is what we need to do, and everyone needs to do it. From the highest to the lowest and everywhere in the middle, and you need to start somewhere. So many people, I say, many of my female counterparts, why don't you give class? Well, I never gave class in my life, so I'll never give class in my life. That doesn't make any sense. How are you going to give class if you never gave class? Okay, never give class. How many people in here never gave class? That means you're never going to give class? That doesn't make sense. You have to start somewhere. How many of you gone to Kusum Sarovar? Anybody ever gone to Kusum Sarovar? Okay, what happens when you go to Kusum Sarovar if you want to go swimming? You have to just jump off, right? You're on those pedestals and the water is there. You can't see the bottom. And if you want to swim, hey, you either jump off or you don't jump off. There's no like putting the toes in, you know. You got to jump off. So you got to start somewhere. And the devotees will help you because they want you to succeed. They want you to succeed. Give class to each other. Meet in small groups and give class to each other. And feedback. Tell, yeah, that was a great class. It would have been better if you did X, Y, Z. Or I thought it needed a little of this. Or, you know, I have a realization that would have been helpful. So many things. Do it. And you'll be able to do it. Krishna will empower you. But you start by reading, you start by studying, start by being awake. That's always helpful. Anybody else? Yes?
I just remember when I was reading the story from Bhagavatam, from the Krishna Bhagavatam in Bhagavatam, I don't know if it's the version common that Krishna said, I was ready to give you all these offerings at the beginning, but you were too much attached to your austerity.
That's in a class. I don't think it's in the Bhagavatam itself. It might be in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's.
You can be also attached to your austerities.
Yes.
Krishna can give you what you want.
Yes. I've heard that also, that Sudama was too attached to being renounced. And so Krishna gave him a lot of wealth so that he would be able to break that attachment as well. And actually, when I was in Mayapur in 1975, Srila Prabhupada was talking. There used to be a train. I don't think it travels anymore. The tracks are still there, but I don't think the train goes anymore. There was a train called the Radharani Express. And it used to go from Mathura to Vrindavan whenever it felt like it. And so you never knew when it was going to go, because it was just kind of like random that it would just kind of go every now and then. And it would cost 5 rupees to get on it, but if you were a sadhu, you didn't have to pay. It was free. So many, many different interesting sadhu-like persons would be on that train, and we would often try to catch it when we came into Mathura Junction train station from Delhi in the morning. And so you'd see these babas, they would be covered by ashes, and they wouldn't wear anything except a chain around their waist and a piece of cloth around their loin. And Srila Prabhupada was once speaking about them, and he said, they're thinking, look how renounced I am. I don't have anything. And by that attachment, they'll stay in the material world. So the attachment to being renounced is also a difficulty in spiritual life. It's an obstacle. We can't be attached to anything. And that point is made at the end of the, not chapter 80, but chapter 81. I read the chapter summary. I didn't read the verses. So, but it's in there that it's expressed that Sudama was able to serve Krishna with nothing, and he was also able to serve Krishna with everything. It didn't affect his desire to serve Krishna. And ultimately, he was able to walk away from both, not having anything and having everything. He just could live with either one. A nice point. Thank you. Yes?
When I go to Mayapur with devotees, in Mayapur, my head and my tea was exploded. I was so suffered that I don't know why. And then when we go to Vrindavan, he was so sweet, and Govardhan and Yamuna and everything.
Different people on different parts of Vaikuntha. Vrindavan and Mayapur are non-different. Okay, yes?
Question, when Sudama come in Dwaraka, the devotees ask, who is this question? Who is this person? Why he looks like that? So my question, is this like naive to ask what they learn in school about what happened in other parts of Bharatvarsha? Because
they didn't have internet. They couldn't get on... They only knew local news. They didn't hear the news from all. When I was even a new devotee, we didn't know what was going on everywhere. Now we know what's going on in a second everywhere. So we're used to like having our head in everyone else's business. But that wasn't the case then. And anyway, there's also some, just the fact that he was walking into Dwarka would indicate that he had some qualification. At the same time, we see that when the four Kumaras came to Vaikuntha, they met Jai and Vijay. And Jai and Vijay saw these four babies and said, "Who do you think you are? What are you doing here in Vaikuntha? You're just little kids. We don't let little kids in here." And they got in big trouble for doing that. So somehow, by Krishna's arrangement, their ability to perceive the greatness of these four babies, who were actually second only to Lord Brahma in their existence in the material world. Lord Brahma came and then they came next. So they were very exalted personalities, but Jai and Vijay couldn't perceive it. So we can understand that it's Krishna's arrangement that that happened. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Prabhupada. Thank you for tolerating my association. Thank you for giving me yours. I'm leaving tomorrow. Hare Krishna, all glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. You have an announcement. He has an announcement.